Let's turn to the book of Second Chronicles, chapter 28. In our last study, we looked at Jotham and his reign in Judah. We finished that out. He reigned from about 749 to 734, approximate dates there. Then we also talked about, we were discussing Ahaz. We're going to finish that discussion up tonight, and then as we move forward, we'll finish that and then move into talking about Hoshea. And of course, you can notice here from the chart, Hoshea, last king in this column. Well, why is that? Well, this is when Israel falls, is given over into captivity at the hands of Assyria. And Assyria will come in, they will take captive Israel, they'll move them out of Israel, and then they will resettle Samaria and the surrounding areas. And we'll talk more about that as we move forward. One thing I didn't post on here, if we have time, we'll move into talking about Hezekiah. I don't have that on the board, but that'll be our next king to look at. So as we finish up what we're talking about last week with Ahaz. So in 2 Chronicles 28, we are introduced to this king. Verse number one, the end of that verse, it says, and he did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord. And he gives a list of some things that he did. It says he made metal images. First he introduces him by saying he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. He made idols, metal images of the Baals. Now remember, we talked about Baal worship had been gone for a while, and he seemingly brings that back. He made offerings in the valley of the sons of Hinnom and burned his sons as an offering according to the abomination of the nations whom the Lord drove out before the people of Israel. And we spent a lot of time looking at the valley of Hinnom. I won't go revisit that, but that connection with the New Testament concept of hell that Jesus introduces us to through Gomorrah, and so Jesus will use what's going on here and what's preceded this as an illustration of what hell will be like, and talking about the abomination of that place. And so we spent some time there. So let's go to verse 5 as we move forward. Ahaz, you'll notice as we continue, his reign is just filled with evil ways, with the way he walked away from God. Verse 5 tells us, therefore the Lord, his God, gave him into the hand of Syria. Now, why did God do that? Well, because of what we just said. God is reacting to his sin. Sin demands punishment, right? And so God gave him into the king of Syria. Now, we talked about this. Let me go back a map here just for a second. We'll come back to this. So at this time, we don't really have it real great, but up here is Syria. But at this time, what's going on in Syria? They're in a war. It's divided into Syria and Assyria. And so there, that country itself is under some turmoil. However, God will use the Syrians to bring punishment upon the people, upon the children of Israel. Now, God isn't going to, on Judah now, Israel later, but Judah now. And so he's going to use the Syrians as a way to punish. It says, who defeated him, talking about Ahaz, and took captive a great number of his people and brought them to Damascus. He also was given into the hand of the king of Israel, who struck him with great force. So you have this just onslaught coming from the north down on Jerusalem. And it says here, though it's not what Babylon will do eventually, when it will come in and it'll just take everybody captive, you, even at this time, have Syria coming in and taking captives. Well, Israel will do that too. What's interesting is, though, God will tell them through a prophet, you take them back. You can't do that. And so God doesn't allow Israel to make slaves of the Judean people like he does allow Syria. So let's go on. Let's go down to verse 8. And I'm going to try to share some points of this with you. I invite you, please go back and read the whole text to get a full view of it. But I'm going to try to hit some highlights here. The men of Israel. So it says the Syrians come down, but now he's going to give some detail about what happens with Israel. They come in and they take 200,000 of their relatives, women, sons, and daughters. So it's not like they just come in and take the men captive. They're taking whole families captive with the intent of bringing them back to Israel and to make them slaves. Now, 200,000 people, in the Civil War, our bloodiest war, how many people died? How much? Just a little bit more. 600,000 people, I believe is the number. Somebody can double check me, but I believe it was 600,000 people. So in this one raid, they take 200,000 people. On September the 11th, 2001, how many people died?
3,300.
About 3,000 people, right? And that was a horrendous tragedy. They come in and they take 200,000. I don't know how big is the city of Sanford? About 25,000. So you're talking about what? 8 Sanfords. Whole pop. So you're talking about double the size,
more than double the size
of the county. Almost 3 county sizes of people. That's just a huge number. And that's just what Israel did. That doesn't include Syria. That's just Israel. And so they took that. They also took spoil from them and brought it to Samaria. Okay, so that's a big day for them. That's a big victory. But, and that word but is a big word, even though it's 3 letters, right? But a prophet of the Lord was there whose name was Oded, and he went out to meet the army that came to Samaria and said to them, "Behold, because the Lord, the God of your fathers, was angry with Judah, he gave them into your hand. But you have killed them in a rage that has reached up to heaven." Now, before I read the rest of that, what is God trying to say to them?
It's not a vengeance. It's not their vengeance. It's almost like they're taking vengeance on them.
Okay.
They're overkill, whatever, I guess.
Yeah, they're not working as the hand of God here. They're out for their own vengeance. We've been careful with vengeance. I was watching something last night, and it was a documentary, and I won't get the details of it, but it was interesting to see people who were essentially victimized in it, and how in some of their lives, this ideal of vengeance just overtook them. The thing about vengeance is, vengeance can do as much harm to us as it does to the person we're angry at. That's what Paul says to the Romans, what? "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord, right? Isn't that what he says? Vengeance has a power to it to cause us to do things we wouldn't normally do. I mean, we see it in our country. The last few years, if anything has taught us about the last few years is, vengeance out of control can do a lot of damage that it shouldn't.
Nothing good comes from vengeance.
We should never let our anger control us. Is anger sinful?
Yes.
Anger is not sinful. Anger controlling us is sinful. There are times when it's okay to be angry.
God got angry.
But we better be careful with it, shouldn't we? We should be very careful. You know, think about it. If somebody harmed one of your children, is it a just thing to be angry about that? Yes, it is. But can that anger then become something kindled in you that leads to some sin?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Jesus, when in John chapter 2, when he's overturning the tables, is he angry?
Yeah.
He is. But is the anger controlling him?
No.
See, the thing is, he never let the anger get out of hand. No, he could have. He could have gotten so angry he hurt somebody. But you notice he doesn't hurt anybody. He just drives them out. He doesn't even hurt the animals. But it's easy for us, and especially when we get in a crowd of people, to allow anger to overcome us. And it becomes...
The more the anger becomes, it seems like. That's where you get outrageous.
And if our anger ever becomes about vengeance, we're in a dangerous place. And it's become something that it shouldn't be. We should never seek after vengeance if we're going to read the Bible for what it says. All right, so let's go on. So he says, you went, you killed them in a rage, and that has reached up to God. God took notice of that. Now, also, what's ironic about Israel being in a rage against Judah? There's some irony there, isn't there, and some hypocrisy. Is their sin any less than in Judah?
No.
Now, both of them are sinful, right? And so there's a little bit of hypocrisy in what they're doing on top of that. Because in just a little bit, they're going to be the ones invaded, and they're going to be the ones taken captive. But let's go on. Verse 10, and now you intend to subjugate, to make slaves of the people of Judah and Jerusalem, male and female, as your slaves. Have you not sins of your own against the Lord your God? Hear me now, send back the captives from your relatives whom you've taken, for the fierce wrath of the Lord is upon you. So God is not going to allow the Israelites to do this now. Is God being a hypocrite here? He allows Syria to do that, but he says to you, Israel, you're not. Is God being hypocritical?
No. Because he laid it out in the law that he gave to Moses and the children. You are not to take your own.
Okay. And I agree with you. I agree with you. But why is it not hypocritical to allow the Syrians to do it and to say to Israel, you can't? Huh?
Syria wasn't under the same law.
Okay.
To us, it does seem hypocritical. If I to be honest, it does seem hypocritical.
Okay.
The Syrians are a tool in God's hand to discipline Israel. In this case, their family, and they've allowed their separation into two kingdoms to cause that to not be recalled, and they're treating each other like separate countries when they're really not. They're one in God's people.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to be following the law. So God says, you can't treat your brothers and sisters that way. That's not the way I set you up and designed you to operate.
Okay. And I agree with all that, but let's take it one step further. In condemning Israel, is he in any way okaying what Syria is doing? Just because he says to Israel, you shouldn't do this, doesn't mean he's okay with Syria doing what they did. So let's see how the logical, it's so easy, that logical jump to saying, oh wait, God's okay with Syria doing it, but not Israel? Where does it ever say that? You can easily fall into a line of thinking here that's wrong, right? God doesn't say, I'm okay with Syria taking and doing some of the brutal things they did. Now, he is using Syria as a tool, but he's also using Israel as a tool here. But let's not forget that. And also, too, God is also sovereign. And what I mean by that is God knows things that you and I cannot know. And we have to be very careful about making judgments against God that are beyond what we can understand or have the authority to do. And so just want to say that. So we'll move on. So God says, no, you can't do this. You've already acted out in rage. You shouldn't have done that. You're now trying to subjugate these people, your brothers and sisters. You should not do that. And on top of that, are you any better than they are? And so what you find out as you continue reading here is that they listen to God here. They end up sending the people back. They even reclothe them and give them supplies. And they take them back. They don't just kick them on the road and say, y'all can leave now. They actually take them back to where they brought them from. And so those 200,000 are brought back. Can you imagine just the process of that, 200,000 people? But anyway, so, all right, so King Ahaz is kind of in trouble, isn't he? And he knows that he's being attacked from what you also find out in the reading is it's not just from the north, but he's even being attacked from the south. All around him he has enemies that are attacking him. Now, what should he do? He should go to God in repentance and beg for mercy. Is that what he does? Well, clue's on the board, right? He doesn't go to God. Where does he go?
He turned to another nation to help him.
Tiglath-Pileser, right? The king of Assyria. And so you're going to have to read both accounts, 2 Chronicles 28, and you're also going to need to read 2 Kings 16. So we're going to try to talk about both of those, about what happens. But if you go to 2 Chronicles 28, I'm sorry, we're going to flip between them, but I've got to pull them both together. So in 2 Chronicles 28, 16, he's facing all of this, and so he decides. It says, at that time, King Ahaz sent to the king of Assyria for help. Now, who's attacking him? Syria, right? And so you've got Assyria over here, Tiglath-Pileser, and he says, Tiglath, hey, my boy, I need some help. And so verse 17 tells us, you know, the Edomites have also taken people. He's being invaded and defeated. He is losing on every front. Well, if you go to 2 Kings 16:7, 2 Chronicles doesn't give you all this detail, but what 2 Kings opens up for us is that Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and said, I am your servant and your son. He's a defeated king right now. Think about what that statement means. And he says, I am your servant, I am your son. In other words, I am your slave. If I'm doing a very literal reading there, I am your slave. Come and rescue me from the hand of the king of Syria and from the hand of the king of Israel who are attacking me. You know, when we get caught up into sin, we will go to every place that we can figure out to avoid going to God. It's like when you're a child and you have broken a rule or you've done something you know you shouldn't. You're going to try to figure out every way you can to avoid going to your parents and saying, hey, man, I met mom, dad, I messed up. Please don't beat me, right? Right? I remember one time, was it last summer? I had these two apple trees. And I like my plants around the house. Like, that's something I really enjoy. That's one. Man, he was shooting up. He was growing. I was excited. The limbs were like this, you know, hanging down with apples. And I told the boys, you know, don't mess with the apple trees. I want you to stay away from them. And one day I come out there, and there's Micah. And he's standing there like this against the tree. And I'm like, that's weird. So I walk on by and I'm like, what's going on? Well, at the same time, Barrett has run into the house or into my shop to find some tape. Uh-oh. I bet you can figure out why. They had developed the idea. They had broken this limb, the most pretty. I mean, it was straight up. It was so nice. And they had broken it off. And he's holding it, trying to keep it up. But when you got over there, you could tell he's holding on for dear life. And they thought they could just go and tape that sucker up. Dad never know, right? Right? We instead of a lot of times owning it up, right, and being honest, we make the problem so much worse on ourselves. And here is this king who has a problem, and instead of opening his eyes and his heart up to God and saying, God, I can see where I am. I'm defeated on all sides. I have wandered from you, and I can see you've taken your protection away from me. God, please forgive me. Please forgive the people. He didn't do that. He goes to another source. He goes looking for the tape. Let me see if I can tape this situation. And he just makes it worse on himself. And so if you continue reading there in 2 Kings 16, Ahaz also took the silver and the gold that was found. So real quickly, if you go and read 2 Chronicles 28, what it simply says is that he goes to Tiglath and he asks for help. But the text says it did him no good. And we're going to see why. But it did him no good. Because it doesn't really help him out in the situation. Well, 2 Kings tells us a little more about why. So he goes there, and in order to get help, look at what he has to give up. Number one, he's given up his dignity. He's given up his dignity. I am your slave. I am your servant. I am your son. I am humbled before you, not God, Tiglath. He gave up his dignity. And now he's going to have to give up his blessings. And so it says that he goes, he takes all the silver, the gold that was in the house of the Lord. He's taking God's money, by the way. That's not his money. That's not his money. That's God's money. And he goes into his own house and the treasury of the king's house. And he sent this present to the king of Assyria. And so the king of Assyria, verse 9, listened to him because it works for him. No? Why? Why do you say that? Well, continue reading. So the king of Syria marched up against Damascus and took it, carrying its people captive to Kir, and he killed Rezin. So Rezin is the king at this time of Syria. See, this is a day when the king of Syria was like, this is a good day. It's a good day, right? I'm getting paid off by the little small Judah, a Judite. The king of Judah has humbled himself. He's come and bowed himself in obeisance to me. I'm getting paid. Plus, now I get to go into Syria. Because what's Syria already? They're distracted, aren't they? They're distracted down here. They've forgotten about the people up here. If you watch Mulan, I think it's Mulan. No, maybe it's Nemo. One of those Disney movies. One of them, and you see, he's running away from the big fish that's trying to eat him. He's gotten out in the middle of the ocean. I think it's the dad. What's the dad's name from Nemo? Well, he's trying to run away. He's about ready to be eaten. What happens? A bigger fish comes and eats that fish that's trying to eat him, right? And that's kind of what happens. You've got Rezin in Syria is trying to eat up all this down here in the south. Well, he wasn't watching behind him. He wasn't watching what was coming up behind him. And something bigger came and swallowed him up. And so so now you have the development, the beginning development of this large kingdom of Assyria. And eventually it's going to take over control of most of that range. Not all of it, but most of it. And so in that way, at least for a time, Ahaz has had Syria lifted off his back by the Assyrians. And thus you begin the formation of the Assyrian kingdom. Any questions about that? So there's a little tagline on the end of this that I think is really important. So, how do you think Ahaz feels in the moment? He's lost his dignity. He's had to pay this big price.
He's right where he started.
And yeah, he's had Assyria lifted off his back, and he's not having to deal with that. But he's still got the Edomites down here to the south, and he's still got Israel there. Well, who does he look to as his deliverer? We look in the wrong places, man. The devil will trick us. So when King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, he saw the altar that was at Damascus, and King Ahaz sent Uriah the priest a model of the altar and its pattern, exact in all details. And Uriah the priest built the altar in accordance with all that King Ahaz had sent from Damascus. So Uriah the priest made it before King Ahaz arrived from Damascus. So he travels up to Damascus. This map has a better view of this. So he travels up to Damascus. He sees this idol, and he's like, well, you know, Tiglath, he seems to be very successful.
So, hey,
maybe his gods will help me. And we've seen this before with other kings. And so he sends down to Uriah, the high priest of God, and he says, well, no problem. We'll make it for you. And that's what they do. And so you can continue reading that. But you just kind of see the degradation that Judah continues to go into. You know, I used to think that Judah was a little bit above Israel. But man, when you start to read what they're doing in Judah, there's just not that much different. You know the one thing that saved Judah? Two kings. Hezekiah and Josiah, right? Outside of them, there's just not that much. I'm talking about in the later part. I know there's some kings early on, but in the later part, they were on the verge of being taken. And we'll see that when we get to Hezekiah. Hezekiah will allow his own pride to get out of hand, right? And he'll get in trouble. But they are so close to that verge. In 2 Chronicles 28, back in 2 Chronicles 28, it says, for the Lord humbled Judah because of Ahaz, the king of Israel. For he made Judah to act sinfully, and had been very unfaithful to the Lord. So Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came against him and afflicted him instead of strengthening him. Right? He went to Tiglath expecting deliverance, and his deliverer became his oppressor. He just traded one problem for another. And so Ahaz, and then as you continue reading, Ahaz goes so far as to change the temple in accord with the idolatrous people around him. And so it becomes more and more corrupt. It says in verse 22 of 2 Chronicles 28, in the time of his distress, he became yet more faithless to the Lord, this same King Ahaz. He sacrificed to the gods of Damascus and that had defeated him and said, because the gods of the kings of Syria helped them. Now, what did Assyria do to the kings of Syria? I don't know that they helped them. Right? He says, because they helped them, I will sacrifice to them that they may help me. But they were the ruin of him and of all Israel. And Ahaz gathered together the vessels of the house of the Lord, cut in pieces. He cut them in pieces, the vessels of the house of God. And he shut the doors of the house of the Lord, and he made himself altars in every corner of Jerusalem. Is there a more symbolic statement of what's going on than the fact he shut the doors to the temple? And I wonder if God said, okay, that's great. Please shut them. Please shut them. In every city of Judah, he made high places to make offerings to other gods, provoking to anger the Lord, the God of his fathers. And then we end out chapter 28, verses 26 and following. It says, now the rest of his acts and all his ways, from first to last, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. And Ahaz slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of in Jerusalem, for he did not bring him into the tomb of the kings of Israel. And Hezekiah, his son, reigned in his place. And so at the end of his life, you know, we think of Ahab as being an evil king. And he was. But Ahaz, is he any better?
No.
He's just not a successful reign in any way. All right, let's move on to Hoshea. Hoshea reigned in Israel from 730 to 721, about 9 years there in Israel. So we're back in Samaria now. This is, of course, as you notice, the last king in that line. Things have been going very poorly in Israel. Now, we concentrated for a while on Judah. Things in Israel have been very bad, too. You may remember from here at the end, you just have a succession of one person assassinating another and then taking the reins and being assassinated, another reign, and it just has continued to Hoshea. He too has become king, not in the line of Pekah, but now is king. His life is summed up in verse 2 of 2 Kings 17. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. However, yet not as the kings of Israel who were before him. So he was bad, but he wasn't that bad. Not the best statement made about you, right? But that's how he summarized. However, it was under his reign that God passed his judgment upon the nation of Israel. Verse 3 tells us, it was against him in his ninth year. Well, it was there near the end. That against him came up Shalmaneser. I don't listen too closely that pronunciation. King of Assyria. So you have a new king in Assyria. Tiglath-Pileser is no longer a king, and so now you've got this new king, and Hoshea became his vassal and paid him tribute. So we saw that in Judah, right? He had become his vassal, his servant to the king of Assyria. Well, now you have the king of Israel doing it as well. However, he didn't pay up like he was supposed to. I guess that's how the mob made its money, right? They would go around to these businesses and they would pay for protection. Problem was they were paying for protection from the mob, right? And that's the way Syria is working. They're kind of like the mob. The other countries are paying them tribute. But verse 4 tells us, the king of Syria found treachery in Hoshea, for he had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and offered no tribute to the king of Assyria, as he had done year by year. Cut those payments off, he's not going to be happy. Therefore, the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. The king of Assyria invaded all the land and came to Samaria, and for 3 years he besieged it. So they fought for about 3 years, as Assyria invaded and came down into Samaria, taking captives as they fought and killing others. We read of the tragic fall in 2 Kings 17, 6 through 23. There we find out what happened. It says, in the ninth year, verse 6, in the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Assyria captured Samaria and he carried off the Israelites away to Syria and placed them in Halah and on Arbor and the river Gozan and in the cities of the Medes. Ah, the Medes. You might want to keep that name in the back of your head. They'll pop up later. I don't know if we have those places on here. But just to kind of give you an idea of what they did, I don't see those on this map. But basically what he was doing was taking them out and he was bringing them north. Now, why did he want to do that? He was taking them out of their homeland and resettling them in other countries, other cities outside of Israel. Why would he want to do that? Weaken Israel, strengthen his own country. Let me see. Okay, so I don't have that on here. All right, so you see up here, so he brings the people out of Israel, Samaria, and the surrounding areas. He will travel them far north. Now, you think about how far away that is. They are far away from home. Them up here in Meda,
the Medes are,
and he settles them in these different cities. Then what we're going to find out, he's then going to take people from Babylon, not from Mede, but from Babylon, and he's going to bring them down to Samaria to resettle Samaria. And we'll talk about that a little bit more next week. But we'll discuss this process of what happened, why he did it, and how we see it in the New Testament. So this stuff's kind of important for talking about some aspects of the New Testament. And we'll talk about why.
Thank you
all. We'll be dismissed and rejoined for our devotional time in just a moment.